the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
My name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I'll come in here. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello again to Dark Discussion Show, a place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe here.
Abe, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Excellent. We usually do have a fifth co-host, but she is at a writer's retreat in Cape Cod, or in other words, basically a type of party weekend type of thing. And they
Writers are the biggest bunch of cowards. They're always retreating.
Oh, but
think there'll be alcohol involved in this retreat?
Maybe.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I would say so, most certainly.
Very light.
Yeah, and a lot of cigarettes, too.
Mm.
Yeah.
So which comes first, the writing or the alcoholism?
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So let's see here. So who are we? Mike, who are we?
Where am I?
Well, you just went through that. You're Phil. I'm Mike. That's Eric over
the
there.
Podcast.
And sitting over there with his hand up. Oh, no, that okay. We're the Dark Discussions podcast. We have discussions about things that are dark, pants optional. we've been doing this since 2011. We are your source for horror film, fiction, and all that is fantastic. And we have a couple of spinoff podcasts, one of which is just about to end. That's the You Know Nothing, Jon Snow podcast, which, of course, is about the hit sitcom You Know Nothing. no, that's obviously about Game of Thrones, which just had its final episode. And so we are having our final wrap-up episode in just a couple of days. And so that spinoff will be dead. And we go dormant until the next spinoff podcast, which is probably going to be Bullets, Profits, and Bots, about season 3 of Westworld, which HBO, not coincidentally, debuted a trailer for during the series finale of Game of Thrones. And there's also Searching for American Gods, about the Starz TV series American Gods, which we just finished our second season doing, and that's on hiatus until whenever they get around to season 3. And then there's Psychotronic
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews.
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic, that's what it is.
Yep,
and you can speak better about that one than I can.
Yeah, the two episodes of that is finally coming out after basically a year hiatus. They're coming out both in May. One will be me doing a solo episode on art house lesbian films, because this will be LGBTQ month in June. And the last episode was last June on 5 art house lesbian films, and so I'll do 5 more for that. And then me and Bill Casolini from the Horror Mafia podcast are going to review about 10 films on another episode. Basically, he gets a bunch of screeners, and he had no idea what to do with them. And being a solo podcast, as Dustin Watson knows, you can get lazy and not do it. And so since he was looking to review these films and he didn't know where to do it, I suggested that he come on to Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. So he's going to do five, and I'm going to do five and quick 10-minute reviews. And so two big episodes will be coming out in June.
And also, Phil, you can edit this out if you're not ready to announce this yet. But in case we are ready to announce it, we're thinking about doing another spinoff podcast on a monthly basis about non-genre films. So yeah, we might cover some westerns, maybe a comedy or two, a drama, whatnot. So yeah, we've been talking about doing this for probably about a year now, and I think the biggest thing that's holding up the whole process is we can't think of a fucking name for it. I came up with a great name earlier today, which is discussions that are not as dark but sometimes still dark, which rolls right off the tongue. if anybody has a better name, feel free to contact us, darkdiscussions@aol.com, if you have a better name for our non-genre podcast.
Absolutely. So yeah, maybe we'll post something on the Facebook group asking for suggestions.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll do that. Also on the Dark Discussions Network is Anthony T's Horror Show, which is a podcast that reviews conventions, movies, interviews a lot of people from the movies, so actresses, directors, and so such. He will be at ScareCon and Scares That Care as well, Anthony. So that's on the network. And where you can find us is darkdiscussions.com, as Mike's mentioned, but also wherever podcasts are found. So Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify,
Overcast.
Overcast, Podbean, we're everywhere, wherever podcasts are found. Just search for Dark Discussions Podcast, and that will bring not only the weekly Dark Discussions Podcast, but all the spinoff podcasts that Mike and myself and Eric mentioned. So I think that's pretty much it for that. We do have a couple of things that we're doing. Eric, what are these a couple of events that we're doing, me and you and Abe and Mike and whatnot? And then me and Mike are doing a separate one, and I'll have Mike bring that one up.
Okay, you just lost me. You mentioned us a whole bunch of times there. But the soonest thing coming up is ScareCon New England. We're going to be attending that convention, and we'll have a table there. We will be involved in some of the events there, although we're still getting details on exactly which ones. It is in, is it Framingham?
Yes, Framingham, Massachusetts.
Framingham, Massachusetts.
The largest town in the United States.
I knew you were going to not be able to not say that. So it's in Framingham, Massachusetts, June 6th, 7th, and 8th. There will be some notable guests there, including Cassandra Peterson, Heather Langenkamp, Felicia Rose, as well as I think it's pretty much all the cast of Phantasm that's still with us. Is going to be there for the 40th reunion, as well as some others. You can just go to ScareCon.com to get details.
Yes, that would be cool. And then we're doing something in Mystic, Connecticut?
Yes, we are. At the end of July, whatever weekend has the 26th in it, I don't remember. But we'll be meeting up in Mystic again. I think this is our third annual Mystic meetup. And I believe we will have at least one listener joining us out there. I believe Mr. Letts is coming all the way from St. Louis again, which is kind of crazy.
Rumors that Holly Masiak and her entire family are coming too.
That would be awesome. So yeah, if you want to join us, feel free. Come out to Mystic. We usually gather for pizza at Mystic Pizza on Friday night and then go see a movie on Saturday and then find somewhere to huddle up and record a podcast about it.
More the merrier.
And then hang out on Sunday. So that's all happening at the end of July. So yeah, stuff going on this summer.
Yep, and Mike, me and you are actually doing something, as well as Anthony T. of the Anthony T. Horror Show.
Yeah, so the weekend after the scare, the weekend after the Dark Discussions meet up in Mystic, Connecticut is the Scares of Care weekend down in Williamsburg, Virginia, Scares of Care Weekend 6. Which I'll be down there for, and Phil will be down there for, and apparently Anthony T. will be down there for.
Wait, when is it, Mike?
The weekend after.
The weekend after what?
The Mystic.
Okay, I thought you said ScareCon, so I was confused. Go ahead.
I started to say that, and then I realized I'm getting my dates mixed up.
Gotcha.
So that is
After Mystic.
The first weekend in August.
August, yeah. Okay.
Right. Now, the actual shenanigans begin on Thursday night with a viewing, with a poolside viewing of The Thing, because that just naturally goes with being in the pool. And because they are having a number of Thing-related guests, or at least are currently slated to have Thing-related guests, including Keith David and Wilfred Brimley, who had to pull out and then pulled back in. So...
Oh, also, you said pull back in and pull out. That's what she said. That's what she said. But also, Pedos and Fuchs is going to be there, too.
Right. And there is a photo op. If you want to get a professional photo op, they'll be there signing autographs and taking pictures with fans, all the celebs will do at their tables. It does cost money, sadly, but that is part of the thing. But there is a professional photo op there. I know that... Sid Haig will be there again, and once again, he will be doing a photo op where all the money is going to charity in his Captain Spaulding costume. I don't know what the cost for that is. I know I did it last year, so I'm not going to do it again this year. But there's a photo op for the reunion for the Monster Squad cast will be there. If you're a fan of that Fred Dekker film from 1986, I'm thinking, 87.
Which one is this?
What's from? Monster Squad?
Yeah, that one I'm not as familiar with, so I can't give you that answer.
All right. Well, someone will have to get the cards until you finally watch it.
Yeah, well, I did watch it back when it was on HBO, like when we were kids. But I don't remember the year.
So, and there's lots of authors, as there always are. Actually, seeing if there's any... Jonathan Mayberry is going to be there. Josh Mallerman, who wrote Bird Box, is going to be there.
Brian Keene will be there.
Obviously. Brian Keene, who is the one that pretty much runs the author section, is on the board, and lots of others. James Rath, James White.
Yeah, you know what he wrote? Eric. He wrote "Come Back to Me."
Come back to me.
Ah, cool.
Yep. So
he'll be there.
He'll be there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They do. Like to give a lot of attention to their author guests. And then there's a whole bunch. So there's just lots of people there. Go to the scaresthatcareweekend.com website, and you can find the links to the celebrities and the authors and whoever the merchants are that are going to be there. They have yet to announce panels and conversations, and so we don't know yet, or the podcaster track. So we have not got any idea what we may be doing. Oh, Joe Bob Briggs. Who just got renewed for a second season on Shudder.
On Shudder. Yeah, I bought my ticket last night.
Oh, good. I got mine about a month ago. So.
Yep, he's doing a two-hour show on Friday night. Yep, so that'll be fun. They had 196, and I think they were going to cap it at 200, so I bought mine immediately.
I can tell you the hotel is sold out and has been sold out for a while, and there's a long waiting list. But there are a bunch of hotels in that area. Colonial Williamsburg is obviously a big tourist attraction. You're right next to, is it
Busch Gardens.
Busch Gardens, right. Okay, so you're right next to Busch Gardens. I was trying to remember if it was Six Flags or Busch Gardens. Right, so you're always right next to Busch Gardens. Literally, you could see the roller coaster outside some of the hotel windows. So if you can't get into the main hotel, which you probably can't, you can get access in any place around that area. And obviously, if you're a local, I highly recommend stopping in and supporting a good charity.
Now, Mike, are you actually going to do the 5K this year?
I have not decided.
Okay, let me know when you decide, because I'll do it if you do it.
Yeah, I really won't know for a while. I've got to figure out where my brain is on this.
Okay, fair enough. On a side note, it's very important to remember this, Mike. It's not Fuchs. Watch Clark. Keep an eye on him.
I thought it was pronounced
the clock.
Right, Ratch the Clock.
Ah, for Christ's sake. I ruined my Boston accent. Damn it.
Why are we watching the clock?
Ah, for Christ's sake. Well,
what's the issue with time? I don't understand.
It's 8:06 right now, so I'm watching.
This is a perfect leeway to another topic, which is a podcaster named Dustin Watson who does the Ha podcast.
You have got to cut a promotional clip for him.
I should. Yeah, Dustin.
He's trying to cancel the podcast. So
yeah,
I don't know
what sees now.
Yeah,
yeah. But he wrote something on Facebook about one of our episodes that me, Abe, and Eric did. And this is what he had to say. He goes, "Love your episode on the house that Jack built. It was my number two film of last year, and you fellas did it justice. Even Abe, who didn't seem to love it as much as Eric and Phil. This is the definition of a film that isn't for everyone, right? In fact, it's possible that it's really only for Von Trier himself. I know he sees himself in the character of Jack. Jack kills. Lars makes films. Both are successful at what they do. At great cost, maybe. I wonder if Von Trier feels some form of damnation applies to him in some strange abstract way, that maybe filmmaking or his art will be his undoing. I don't know what I'm writing. It's been too busy of a day, and my brain is mush. However, much love, homies. Great show."
Thanks, Mr. Watson.
Thank you very much.
Yep, Mr. Watson. So people can check him out. He does a lot of guest appearances on various other podcasts.
He's a whore.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how he does it because he has that weird time zone. He's like 3 hours behind everybody else.
Yeah, he's in the stupid time zone.
Yeah, well, the worst is like the Horror Carter podcast. I've guest on that show like 3 times.
Yep.
And since the guy that runs it, Don, he's out in California.
You just said Horror Corridor. Did you mean something else?
I'm sorry. I've guest hosted on the Horror Mafia podcast.
There we go.
And Don Anelli, who runs it, is out of California. And so the show always starts recording at 10 at night. And it never ends until 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with that.
Oh, it's a killer. I've done it for like 3 times, and I've been like dead the next day every time. Yeah. So that time zone thing is a killer sometimes. All right, so I got nothing else. Anybody else have anything before we begin? Anything?
Nope.
All right, so I guess, Eric, you can let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight.
All right, tonight we're going to be discussing an Argentinian film that is available on Shudder called Terrified. That's Terrified with a D on the end.
Or it's original.
Not Terrifier with the clown. That's a different movie. We're talking about Terrified with a D.
Or its original title, from its original language, Aterrados.
¿Qué es lo que está pasando, chiquito? ¿Por qué viniste a visitarnos? ¿Qué es lo que te trajo hasta acá?
¿Pero qué es lo que implica todo esto?
Esto implica que nosotros tres vamos a dividirnos en cada una de las casas donde creemos que ocurren los fenómenos paranormales.
Señora, acá las cosas se están poniendo muy difíciles.
Usted puede elegir a no estar aquí.
¿Qué carajo es eso?
¿Qué? tiene que tener sangre en las manos, no en este lugar. A estos seres les gusta la sangre.
That's right. The film is in Spanish, I guess, is a terror dose. But English language, it's Terrified, and it is a Shudder exclusive. It's technically, I guess, a 2017 film, but it came to the States in 2018. And me, Mike, and Eric all saw it, and based off of our opinions, it landed in our top 10 best horror films of 2018 for the...
Yeah, it was my number 8.
Yeah, for the combined list for Dark
Discussion. And its U.S. release date was October 11th, 2018.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so the film is directed and written by a guy named Damien Rugna. And he's done a few other films, but I don't know if any of them have actually made it to the States. Most of them, though, are shorts or as a writer. So this is maybe his director. No, he has 10 directorial credits, but most of them are shorts. And the only other film I see here, I don't know, I don't think any of them have made it to the States. So either way, this is his, I guess, U.S. debut. And stars a bunch of people we don't know because it appears they're all locals to...
It stars Argentinian Donald Sutherland.
It does, actually, yes. Yes. And actually, he's probably from Chile because, as we know, Donald Sutherland is a Canadian. So he wouldn't be from the country that he's actually performing in. You get it? See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. All right, so I guess we can talk about how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And I guess we'll start with Abe, who I think hadn't seen it prior to this. And how did you hear about this, Abe, and what was your thoughts?
Well, I remember seeing actually the trailer for it last year, but I never got a chance to actually see the film, so that's why it never, you know, there was never on, never one of the films I got to see that year. I missed it, so it never made any spot on my list for 2018. So when I heard that we were going to do it for this year, and I had a Shutter account and all that, it worked out. And I watched it today just to keep everything fresh in mind. It's a very strange film. It's a well shot film. It's usually for the par for ghost films, there's a lot of loud noises and a lot of jump scares. And there's a couple of jump scares here and there, but they're used very sparingly. A lot of it comes from the unease and tension of build-up, of strange sights and weird sightings. The characters catch glimpse of these spiritual beings and the grotesque sights. It's really just kind of lets you soak in the horror of what you're experiencing, slowly building up. And it's very different. Well, it uses a lot of familiar things that you would see in a ghost story, but does it in a way that is, I think, a lot more effective than what a lot of supernatural films have been doing recently. Some of the ghosts are just horrific. Some of the way that the characters are as much in the dark about what's going on as you are helps you put it in the mindset that even if the expert characters who are supposed to try to know what's going on are lost. So it really leaves a lot of the mystery there. And the less you know, the more frightening everything is because it's hard to explain what they're dealing with. And that works. It's a pretty well-shot film. I think the first... I say about a good 75% of the film I thought was really strong. I thought Kylo was a little weaker, and towards the end, not a whole lot. It's still a really well done film. It's kind of hard to talk about without getting into spoilers, because there are some great shots and scenes. I'll talk about more about that when we get into it. But overall, I liked it.
Yeah, very good. For me, I actually think I heard about it through various other Facebook groups for other podcasts that are friends of our podcast, so Horror Card or the Horror Mafia podcast or Buddy Blitz or various others. And people were saying that this was a pretty good film and it's on Shudder. So I decided to check it out because I was trying to fill in my list near the end of the year. And as Eric mentioned, it came out in October. So Q3-4 basically when it was available to watch. I watched it and it's interesting because it's only a 90-minute film or so. I think when we discussed offline last year about it, some folks, we kind of mentioned that it could have even been a greater film had it been a little longer, because this is a type of film that actually could have been longer without weakening the film. And, I felt this film was awesome. This is how I would love a supernatural or a ghost story to be. It's very, very outside the box. Like, even though it's a foreign language film, it's not different like a lot of the Asian films, but it's not standard like a lot of the American or European ghost story films. It's completely different than anything I've seen, and I think the script is absolutely brilliant. The coincidences that occur and how people show up to this location make sense. How it happens, how the hauntings occur based off of the location. Again, like Abe said, it's hard to talk about without spoiling, so I'll get into that when we talk in the spoiler section. I felt was brilliant. It's really an ensemble cast of characters rather than a true lead, which makes it, again, very different. And the main thing about it, and the thing that makes this film really good, besides all the stuff that I said now prior, is the fact that it's scary as hell. This film is brilliantly scary horror film, and if it had been in English language, this could have been a blockbuster up in the States, North America and whatnot. So high recommend, awesome film, and yeah, I loved it. Mike?
Yeah, I don't remember how I heard about it. It's just one of those, if you're on social media, you start picking up a buzz about certain films, and I'd seen it mentioned, and, you know, you have to go through that. Wait, you're not talking about the clown film, right? It's just one of the creepiest films that I've seen in, it's certainly the almost 8 years we've been doing the podcast, right? In terms of its strong visuals, they're just some really creative ideas. I guess if you try to describe them, they won't necessarily stand out. So a lot of it has to do with the execution. There's just a scene of someone walking up to a car that it's just kind of fucking weird. It's just, and that's all I'm going to say about that. Honestly, I would say this: if you are looking for a reason to try Shudder, if you have never tried Shudder, I know they have a Shudder app on the Xbox One. I know they have Shudder apps on most
Apple TV,
and other things. Or if you have an Amazon, channel, which again, almost everybody has. You could subscribe to it through Amazon, and so you don't have to worry about having a standalone app. There's a lot of reasons. We just had this conversation actually a couple of days ago on the Facebook group. There's a lot of stuff that's good to watch on Shudder.
And
some of it's
it,
just
support them.
Yeah, and support them. It's $4.99 a month. You could do without that one cup of Starbucks a month.
I mean, if you just watch one film, it pays for the month, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it, it has, obviously, it has the Joe Bob Briggs series on it. It has some original series on it. It has a lot of films on it that are classics. It has a lot of exclusive films. It's not up in the Netflix territory, or certainly not in Amazon Prime territory. But there's still plenty of reasons to watch, and here is one of the best ones. Really, this is a film that I would highly recommend that you just turn off the podcast, sign up for Shudder, watch it, then come back and listen to the podcast. It's just not something. It's not because this is something that's there's a twist, right? There's no, oh, you won't believe what happens. It's I think works well as a fresh experience. You know, because it is unlike I think any other kind of ghost-ish story that I've seen in terms of what some of the things that it does, and just has some really unique images and visuals. So go do it. That's my recommendation, and that's all I want to say about the film until we get into the spoiler territory.
All right, sounds good. Eric.
I think I just ran across this browsing Shudder and decided to give it a watch, and I was really glad I did. I don't have a whole lot of unique comments to make that haven't been said already about it. I'll agree with a lot of what everybody has said. It does have really interesting visuals that probably our verbal descriptions aren't going to do justice to. I will say that for people who need to have all the answers by the end of a movie, you might want to skip this one because you don't get all the answers. I am personally cool with not having all the answers. So I enjoyed this film immensely. I watched it once when it first came out, and I just finished watching it again about an hour ago. And I was watching it again, and I knew there were some of these jump scares in here, and God damn it if they didn't get me anyway. even though I'd already seen the movie before. One in particular that I'll point out once we get into spoiler territory. But yeah, I think this is a great movie. Encourage everybody to watch it.
All right, very good. All right, so Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. When strange events occur in a neighborhood in Buenos Aires, a doctor specializing in the paranormal, her colleague, and an ex-police officer decide to investigate further. That's it. Nice.
Yeah, that's good. It doesn't spoil anything. Doesn't say much. I do like to bring up one point that you brought up, Eric, which is really good, and that's it doesn't give you all the answers, and I think that is one of the things that's great about this film, because we don't have those scenes where you have exposition that feels right. Fake or people searching the internet for answers.
There's yeah. One thing going on in this movie I'm going to talk about that I still don't understand at all what the heck was going on.
She was banging the cop.
No, not that.
Oh, okay.
But really, I think the sooner we throw up the spoiler flag, the better, because there's some shit to talk about.
Oh, yeah. And on that subject of the answers and stuff like that, as I said earlier, that's part of what makes it all so unnerving, is that because you're locked in the dark so much, everything is much more creepier, because you can't comprehend what exactly they're dealing with, you and the characters.
Right. Yeah. And in that regard, I was watching it, even though there are no tentacles in the film, you could make an argument that this is kind of Lovecraftian. Because it is that sort of, it's not really, I guess, a ghost story. Maybe.
Yeah, I was gonna start right. arguing, but it figured could be like a bunch of people when they were talking about it said it's right. a ghost story. I don't know. In fact, I think they explicitly state at one point in the movie that they're not actually ghosts.
Right, but it's
they're not demons. They're like outer beings, like from Cthulhu.
Yeah,
right. But for all intents and purposes, it's a ghost story, right? If you're gonna ask somebody, what is this like? Yeah. It's basically like a ghost story. And I'd say if there's any flaw, like it doesn't explain what's going on, but I do think my biggest gripe with the film is that it has a minute at the end or near the end where they try to explain what's going on, and maybe it's an issue of language, or maybe it's just me, but I don't feel like they quite did a good enough job. Like they just did.
It was still pretty fucking vague.
Yeah, where they just basically did it in such a half-assed way to leave people confused, whereas if they didn't try to explain it, I don't think it would have been a problem. And if they completely explained it, it would have been a different thing, but at least they would have committed to that thing. And instead, they gave kind of a half-assed explanation that, as like I said, I know has left some people confused. It left me a little more frustrated the first time because I was expecting, oh, they're explaining it. Maybe. And then
not so
I like,
much.
Kind of, yeah. Like, and on the second viewing, knowing that that never actually, that thread never really gets completed, you know, it didn't bother me at all. But anyway, that's just me.
No, that's fair. All right, sounds good. Any other items that anybody wanted to bring up that's generally related to the film before we get into the plot, spoilers, and any scene that we want to discuss?
I think we're going to have a better chance of talking about it if we go right to spoilers.
All right, sounds good. All right, so we'll throw up the spoilers. And Eric, why don't you repeat that thing once more about what people should do if they don't want to hear the spoilers?
Go to hell! Oh, that's not what you meant.
Yes, it was.
You should stop the podcast, go sign up for Shudder, watch this movie, and come back and listen to our conversation, because we're going to be spoiling stuff from here on out.
Right, right. And that's works for me. All right, so that's the one thing that's interesting, too, is that at the time when this first came out, none of us had only you, Eric, and you, Mike, had Shudder. And I only picked it up, like, in Q4 of last year. And so this is a film that we most certainly would have probably done an episode on long ago, had it not been an exclusive to Shudder, I think. Because at the time, we didn't even know Abe had Shudder. And I know Chrissy didn't. And so we just kind of, you know, let it go by the wayside. So yeah,
oh, we're doing it now.
We are. All right, so let's discuss this film and whatnot. So what's this film really about? It's basically about this location rather than a home or a person that's possessed. It's just a
small neighborhood.
It's like a longitude, latitude area on the map that just happens to be, I guess, quote unquote, evil.
And the movie starts off with events in three different houses in the same neighborhood that spur this paranormal investigator to come out and start looking around.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of interesting, too, because two paranormal investigators show up because two different people out of the three homes that Eric just mentioned contact different paranormal investigators, and they kind of know of each other, and they never met, and they just show up at the same time because one is investigating one house and another one's investigating another house.
Well, what's really cool about it is that it really how all these intertwined stories and characters is so well handled in such a short amount of time really shows how well written the script was.
Yeah, because it starts with one event. And
that
then
ties into another event that dies into the third
gives,
event.
And then gives us a flashback. And then, you know, ties up. And then eventually all goes all the way back to the future. So it's a really neat structure. It's an interesting structure. Because it starts out with, was it Carlos? What was his name?
I thought his name was Juan.
Juan? I don't remember.
His last name was Caleb. Calabajo.
No. That was the other one. That was the neighbor's Walter.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So I think it's Juan and Clara.
Clara. Mm-hmm. All right. That's why I was thinking with a C. Yeah. Right. Juan and Clara are living in a house in, it looks like, suburban Argentina.
I see Buenos Aires in the wiki here.
It looks like one of those attached houses. So it's like a one building with two houses on the right and the left.
Right. He comes home from work. She's in the kitchen. She's afraid to. Oh, she hasn't made dinner. She's afraid to go in the kitchen because she hears voices in the kitchen.
Voices coming out of the sink.
Yeah, coming out of the sink, and they're going to kill me. And of course, you know, being the man who kills things, he says, "Oh, that's just silly. It's the, you know, whatever." the septic right, system.
It's the neighbor, you know, through the wall, because like I just said, it's like a duplex house, you know, things like that. And it makes sense. I mean, obviously she's telling the truth, but you know, what's the first thing you think, right? It's got to be explainable, because you know, there's no such thing as supernatural or anything like that. At least, you know, if this was not a horror film, you would not believe it. So I think the guy's legit to say, well, you know, being the man or not, I think he's legit.
And it's really cool is that the scare it leads up to is first brought up with a mislead at first.
Yeah.
In which they're sleeping and the wife gets up to take a shower. And one suddenly hears banging against the wall, and eventually he just drives him up, just drives him nuts, and he goes out to confront his neighbor through the intercom. And when he gets the answer, he goes back because no one's there, only just static sounds. And then he's realized it's not the banging from his neighbor, but much closer to him. And he goes to the bathroom to check on his on Clara, and she's dangling in the shower, being slammed back and forth against the wall. And it's a gruesome scene, but it's so well shot, because usually when they have characters who are grabbed by supernatural force, they are heaved like over, like they're thrown like crazy around. I don't know, like they're almost whiplash. Here it's almost like a steady pendulum, you know, as she's battered back and forth, and he's just trying to stop her, and he's freaking out, and it's really unsettling.
Yeah, and I have to think in a more conventional film, it would have been him walking in, and you might like see something move back and forth again past the camera with a shocked look on his face, and then you do a flash cut to his point of view as you watch her like bounce like once or twice against the walls of the bathtub, and then you'd get like dun dun dun, and there's the title would appear, Terrifier, you know, or Terrified. Terrifier was the clown movie. Terrified. And then you go to where you do, which is go to the asylum, right? Was it?
I don't know.
I think police
station?
I thought it was a police station, yeah.
Well, he's in
a prison.
He's in a robe and everything like that.
Right. That's why I was thinking it was an asylum. So regardless, the point is they sustain
he's
this.
Incarcerated, like, whether or not it's a whether
but
it's
my
asylum.
Point being that they don't just show you like they like you watch her banging back and forth,
right.
Him trying to save her, unable to stop it. And the important lesson here, folks, is that when there's evil spirits in your house trying to kill you in the kitchen, don't think they don't know where the other rooms in the house are. All right? And especially maybe stay out of other rooms that have plumbing.
Yeah, and it's a very visceral scene. I mean, you just see her, you can hear the skull breaking as it's constantly bashed, and you see her face being pushed in and stuff. It was a really unsettling scene. They really sell the scare really well, and it wasn't a jump scare too. It was a pretty natural reveal, but it was still so effective because of how it was executed.
And it was shocking as hell too. I mean,
oh yeah, absolutely.
It was like one of those 28 days openings, you know, where it's like just insane 5 minutes of like what the and then like Mike said, you know,
well,
cut the credits.
Another thing too is that the husband and wife pairing in a supernatural film is so, you know, on for the just you know, a common thing that is used. So for her to get complete axed within the first 5 minutes was also another shocking moment.
Right. And there's reasons for that, because it's not anybody's story, because as we find out later in the film, it's a very much an ensemble cast. I mean, it's like Game of Thrones, where you could list like seven people, and each of them would be equal stars of this movie.
Oh, I agree. I'm just saying, if you go in there blind, you wouldn't have been expecting that, though.
Yes, right, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty shocking. So it's not just a haunting; it's a violent, like, you know, it's a murder. I guess it is a murder. So it's more dangerous than just what we've seen in some, you know, ghost stories from bygone days.
Is it a murder? Is it? Did evil spirits count as a murder?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I don't know.
Well, they suspect the husband, don't they?
Oh, yeah, that's why he's
always the husband.
That's why he's in the jail, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Well, I mean, how's he going to explain it, right? He's the only person in the house, and she's dead. And he was there when she's died. And
the paranormal investigators believe him.
Yeah, they believe him because they saw the pictures.
Yeah, well, they also presented photo evidence of another case that happened in the United States, saying there was a similarity between the wife's death and this other case.
Right, and then there's a third paranormal investigator, and he appears to be an American because he's the one that investigated the one in the States, and he has trouble with certain words in the Spanish language because, like, he didn't know how to say neighborhood, and they had to, you know, tell them, they had to say the word for him so he could understand. But generally, he speaks Spanish great, but obviously, you know, he's not going to know the whole lexicon like a Spanish speaking person would. So that's how you know he's not from the States. And he does use English words every so often throughout the film.
Was it just me, or was there a weird glitch in subtitles every now and then for you guys?
Yes, I did. Okay. Same here.
There were some words that looked like they were missing a letter and such. It was weird.
Yeah, it always seems like that. A lot of times I've noticed that they now use a computer translator to do these rather than a person
which sometimes ends changing. Hilariously.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure does. Oh, you ever do those translate on Instagram, you know, or Facebook, and you know, like one of our listeners from Finland, sorry, she posts a lot of stuff about her dog, and I always do the translation, and it comes back, and I generally get the idea what it's saying, but it's all, you know, messed up because a computer did it.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that may be some of the reasons here. All right, so, yeah, from that point on, then we begin the story of Walter, because eventually we're going to find out that the three sets of stories all are linked because, again, they're neighbors, two right next door and one's across the street. And the three paranormal investigators are all linked because of one was contacted by Walter and the other one was contacted. The third one, which we haven't even talked about yet, was contacted by a policeman. So, I guess we'll get into the third one after we discuss, I guess, the second one, right? Walter,
right?
Because that's the one it goes into next.
So if you remember, Juan had come out and yelled at his neighbor, Walter, because he thought he was doing renovations and banging about. And actually the sound he heard was his wife getting bashed to death. But Walter had been doing a bunch of stuff, but he was not renovating. We come to find out that he's been desperately trying to get a hold of these paranormal investigators because he's losing his mind because he can't sleep because he is convinced that there's something in his place, but he can't see it. And he's trying to find it. So what we come to find out, and this is our first clue into what is actually going on here, is that there is this thing living in his apartment, a lot of the time under his bed. but you can't see it all the time. And he knows it's there because, there's a scene where he gets into bed and his bed starts moving. So it's not like he's hallucinating this. There's physical manifestations, but he can't see whatever this thing is that's doing all this and is driving him mad. And then eventually he starts to find methods to determine how to get a look at it. And it has something to do with darkness and light, as to whether you can see this thing or not.
And
these things are kind of terrifying.
Oh yeah, absolutely. there are these emaciated skeletal
They're humanoid.
Humanoids.
They're naked men running around your house. That's fucking creepy. I'm sorry.
Well, they're more than just naked men, though, because they have, like, weird skin, and they're very skeletal, and they have glowing eyes, and it's very, very creepy.
Very creepy.
Oh, your cat has glowing eyes when it's under the camera, too.
But what's really, really cool about how these creatures are used is that not only are they mostly hidden shadow, and sometimes only part of them are revealed, but there was a Ron Kuhn moment where he gets he has a light on, and he sees its shadow against the wall, and its fingers kind of dangling over him. One moment he actually tries to look around for it, and he just sees it running out of the room, and it just constantly just toying with him, moving everything around, shifting the bed. It's really unnerving because it's this escalation of this taunting spirit. And there's even a moment where he gets a video camera to try to, you know, show these experts.
And that was creepy as fuck. It reminded me of Paranormal Activity.
Yeah. This thing fucking pulls itself from under the bed and stands over him. Look, watch him as he sleeps, and then crawls right into the frickin' closet, and it's eerie. It's such a simple trick, but it's so well shot and done that it makes your skin crawl. It's just so much is done so well here with such a simple trick, because they don't rely too much on jump scares.
There's like the ultimate scary moment, and I think this might be the last time we see Walter, is when he's looking at the video camera and he sees that thing go into the closet. So he has a gun, and he opens up I think it's a wardrobe, actually. He opens it up and fires the gun in there, because he saw on the video that the thing went in there, but there's nothing in there. So then he closes it and turns back around and starts looking at the video camera, and after he opened it and shot in there and closed it again, the thing emerges from in there, having not been shot and not been seen. And you're just like, what? That's not even fair!
Oh,
that's the last we see of Walter, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Walter's out of the picture after that.
Well, I think we get to see him through in the quote-unquote other world, the hole in the wall.
Oh, later. You're right.
Yeah, we'll talk about
that later. Yeah,
yeah, but I think I don't know the situation. I mean, obviously, depending on your ability to with what work and money and whatnot, if you are able to just pack it up and get the hell out of there, or try to solve the problem yourself. Once you figure out that it's paranormal. And it's creepy as hell. I think you would
bow out.
Yeah.
Out the fuck
out of town. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when it's actually moving shit around on you all the time.
No. Yeah.
That's a case of being too dumb to live.
Yeah, that's a good thing there, Abe. I like that term. You win the podcast.
Well, it's actually a trope, actually, where a character does things so stupid that they just should be removed from the gene pool. I mean, this guy had plenty of time because he spent so much of it trying to get experts to try, you know, be paranormal pesticides. Then he should have just packed up and just went somewhere else. Even hell, even a hotel for the time being.
Well, he may not have realized the extent of the danger he was in, because it was certainly bothering him and it was certally creeping him out. But it hadn't. I don't think it had harmed him in any way up until the emergence from the wardrobe.
I don't know. The very fact that it was eating away at his sanity should have been enough of a reason to get out of there.
Yeah,
that's a fair point. I'm just saying that people often don't consider leaving their home to be an option.
Right, and a lot of times people don't act rationally when they're under stress,
especially in horror movies.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in life.
Yeah, that's true.
Because let's be honest, where would we be with daytime TV if people behaved rationally?
Yeah, That's a good point. Yeah, I assume you're not even talking about soap operas, because they're probably the more sane shows.
No, Jerry, I'm talking about
Jerry.
Yeah. Jerry Springer, you know, the courtroom shows, all that stuff, he urinated on my windshield, yes.
Right, yeah. I know what you mean. So that's the second story.
And then it ties into the third story.
Oh,
because I think it's right after we get that.
Mike, they go there.
Right after they have the scene with the thing coming after Walter, they cut to a little boy who is drinking water out of a faucet outside when Walter was going crazy. And Walter's yelling at the kid through his blinds, "Get the fuck out of here! Get away from here!" And he's trying to save the kid because he doesn't want the kid coming near this thing that's bothering him. But he scares the kid. The kid backs into the street and just fucking gets pegged by a bus.
Oh god! It's another scene. It's just like it doesn't cut away from it. It shows it happen, and it's just like holy shit!
Yeah, didn't see that one coming.
Right. Yeah, because basically what it is, the kid's playing like soccer or something out in the street, and like a lot of kids, even though he lives across the street, he's planning to use the water hose from the neighbor, and usually if you're friendly with the neighbor, a neighbor generally won't care that necessarily, but you never know. And this guy seems like he's the grumpy old man saying, "Hey, get off my property," when that's not the case at all. He was like telling the kid to just get the hell away because there's something bad in this house. And so the kid backs off his yard onto the street, and then he gets pegged, as Eric put it. And he's
so
dead.
Basically, the whole neighborhood comes out and witnesses this, and they bury the kid. But I guess the kid has other ideas?
Yeah, this is when I think the story really begins, because this is when we are introduced to what will be basically, quote-unquote, the main characters the last 40 minutes of the film or so.
And this is what actually I think gets the investigators out here, is because, there's been spooky shit happening, and this other guy, Walter, has been freaking out, and then there's the weird death of the wife. But this time there's like something physical there for them to look at. This corpse of the kid got out of his grave and came back home and is sitting at the kitchen table with a bowl of fucking cereal.
In his defense, Fruit Loops are yummy.
And this is another thing, is how the film kind of subverts conventional horror elements, is that the corpse just sits there. And just sits there. It does not make any demonic sounds. It doesn't twist its head around. It might move slightly, but just barely. And a lot of times it's out of sight. So a lot of these moments you just think, you're just waiting for this corpse, this cadaver, to do something. And it's just sitting there, and it's so unnerving.
Right. And basically what it is as Mike kind of mentioned, the mother, obviously she's not doing well.
Say she's traumatized.
Yes.
And the policeman appears to possibly be dating her. So he calls this paranormal investigator who I guess has worked on cases for the cops in the past or whatever, and brings him in, and he shows him the corpse that is fairly decomposed sitting at the table. And so the question is to debate whether, did someone doing an evil prank, or is this supernatural? And at this point, the cop is determined, or at least believes, that it's more than just a prank. And so that's why he brings this guy in.
Fairly apparent that this kid walked in, because there's, like, shoe prints all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, muddy shoe prints.
And there's even like almost like a sign that he was actually crawling on the wall at one point outside the house.
Right. So that's and so they got to determine what they're going to do, and obviously they don't want to talk about it. The cops, I mean the boyfriend cop, the head cop, because obviously what are they going to say? And because first of all, he believes that they're going to blame the mother that she went and got the body because she's mentally insane, and you know, it's basically a pet cemetery deal where I got to get my child back out of the grave. And then you have the problem of how do you return the body without letting people know about it. So the cop has this thing where they're going to just try to cover the whole thing up. And that's when this paranormal investigator bumps into this woman, who's another paranormal investigator that we find out is the woman that Walter was calling before he disappeared.
Right. And she's checking out the house across the street.
Right. And then that's when they find out that the third house where, you know, the wife got killed happened to be right next door. But go on.
The good news is that real estate in this neighborhood is probably pretty cheap.
Yeah. And it's a fairly nice neighborhood, too. So you can get a good deal in this neighborhood. That's not bad.
Well, and so the investigators start their investigating. And this was weird. Because I don't know if they have different lore in South America than they do. Because, I mean, we've all seen Japanese ghost movies, they have a very distinct idea of what a ghost is.
Yeah.
And later on in this movie, they even say that this isn't ghosts. It's like an interdimensional being, which almost sounds like, somebody used the word Lovecraftian earlier, and if I recall correctly, it's been a long time since I read any Lovecraft, but if my memory serves me, in a couple of his stories, he refers to places where the barrier between worlds is thin. And that might be the same thing that's going on here.
Yeah. It's like something, it's like almost like a layer that separates the living and the dead, or these creatures' world has been shaven away and opened and allows these things to seep through.
Yeah. And it all depends on how you're seeing things as to whether you can see these beings or not. And there's a couple examples that happen later in the movie. One of which is the jump scare that sent me through the roof.
the window scene?
Yes, the window scene.
That was a great scene. That was awesome.
Mean.
But that was like, for me, the Viewmaster scene in the first Insidious film.
Uh-huh.
Certainly the second time, you know, where you're just stupid, but the first time you had to know that was coming. You had to know it was coming. It doesn't matter. It's still bad.
Well, the one thing that they do good, or well, I should say, in this film is there's three doctors and the cop, and eventually they're gonna stake out the three houses, because one house the guy has disappeared, which is Walter. The other house is the guy and the wife, and the wife's dead, and the guy gives permission to the paranormals to, you know, stake out the house, and the third house is the girlfriend of the cop. So they have access to all three houses. So they, you know, the screenplay is really well done, because it just answers questions or before they're even asked.
Yeah.
So
everything's set up and moved along really quickly, and done well too.
Right. And then the thing is that we have these paranormals and the cop in each house has a different one. So one's in one, and others in another, and the third is in the third, and then the cop just walks back and forth between the three of them. And so when they're looking out at the house across the street where Walter used to live, the paranormal investigator says, oh, I see, you know, the other paranormal investigator. So unlike in the Insidious films, you can't really tell whether he's looking at a ghost in the distance necessarily or the paranormal investigator that's just looking out through
the
window.
He was bald and naked. It was pretty obvious.
Yeah, it was pretty obvious it was one of these things.
Well, that
unless you were watching on your little on a little computer screen, but
well, that's a fair point too, Mike. But also, you have the paranormal investigator not knowing, so he's not prepared for it, and I think that makes it even more more viable of a jump scare than the one in Insidious, because the Insidious one, like you said, we knew that eventually they're just going to see the ghosts.
Mm-hmm. You know. Right, in defense of Jano, he doesn't actually know the other investigator well.
No.
You know, well, maybe he likes to get naked and walk around in the middle of the night.
It's also this cool thing where, because of the trick of the light that's involved with whether you can see these creatures or not, he's shifting his head around this, you know, how there are two panes of glass in a window. He's going back and forth between one pane and the other, and I think they're kind of cut at an angle. So when he's looking through the one window in a particular way, he can see the being in the window across the street, and then when he shifts his head to look through the other window, he can't see it. So he does it, he sees it once and shifts and can't see it anymore. He does it again, sees it and can't see it anymore. And then he shifts back to see it again. And when he shifts back to the window where he can't see him, all of a sudden there's another one right there in the fucking window. And you just go through the roof and it's awesome.
Right. And so this is, again, one of those things where the benefit, the payoff is in the timing. Because usually you do one, two, three. There it is. You know, and they just keep going and keep going and keep going until it just your mind finally just lets its guard down, whether it's intentional or not.
Well, and the whole time he's on the phone with the guy in the other house going, "Hey, is that you in the window?" And the guy's like, "What the fuck are you talking about? I'm not near the window." He's like, "Well, then who is that?" And he's like, "Who's who?" And they're like going back and forth on the phone with the guy that's actually over there trying to figure out what the hell Giannis is talking about. And then boom, scary dude is there to get him.
Another weird, really wild scene was when the cop and the other investigators were checking out the house. They find a bunch of silverware dangling from the cabinet from the bottom.
That was pretty cool.
But there was no hooks, nothing like that.
It was like magnetically hanging down.
Yeah, and suddenly one of the knives jabs the investigator through the hand and holds him up there. And
that starts sucking his blood.
Yes, you can see his blood traveling up the knife into the freaking cabinet. And it's such a wild scene because you can hear something shifting back and forth inside the cabinet. And the cop's trying to find there was gun. And it's so weird. It's so fucking strange, but it's so fucking cool.
And I also thought one of the most effective elements of this movie was that the cop has a heart condition, right?
Yeah.
And during these games where all this really scary shit is happening, you can hear his heartbeat. And then later, it even gets so bad that he actually has a heart attack, which I think is one of the most effective scenes I've seen in a movie. But anyway, yeah, I love the fact that they just embraced that. And the sound design they use to kind of give you that feeling of what it's like for him and with his heart racing and his hearing problem and him straining to focus. I thought that was all supremely well done.
It was. It was a top-notch sound design. And it also gave me, as a viewer, stress as well. Because,
oh, yeah.
You know, something's wrong with him, and you're like, "Oh my god, is he gonna croak?" You know, because his heart is winding down and whatnot. And so, and it's also unexpected too, because I don't know how it is in Argentina, but if it was in the States, if he had a heart condition, he would have to retire. Here in Argentina, I don't know if he knew he had a heart condition or if it just came on because of the stress.
No, he mentioned it earlier, actually.
He did, okay. Yeah, and this is a situation that is probably more, oddly, and I don't want to say that, but I guess I have to, probably more stressful than a gunfight, because at least if you're in danger that way, it's all real. While here is this, you have no idea what's going on.
Well, yeah, at least in a gunfight, you know what the hell is happening.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, at least your enemy is something you can see and fight back against.
Right, and you know how to stop the enemy. Here, it's like, what do you do?
So I want to talk about the woman in the other house because it leads up to the other heart moment, which is the one I like so much.
Okay, is that what's her name? Is her name Patricia, the mother?
Name.
The mother, right?
No, the doctor.
Oh, you mean the
investigator.
The investigator, the woman investigator. Yeah.
Mora?
Mora, that's her name.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So Mora's in Walter's house, right?
Yes, that's right.
And can anybody explain to me what the fuck that device was she was using and what it's for? She's got this thing with a chain on it that's hovering over like a metal plate of some sort, and then there's like a rotating, I don't know, solar system model or something right next to it.
I couldn't figure it out myself. That was weird.
And I kind of liked that they didn't bother to explain it.
Well, it was just, you know, the two things, the chain,
uh-huh.
Right? It was just, you know, and the globe, they're just desk toys, you know, like executive desk toys. Mm-hmm. Is all they are. Whatever the official purposes are from them, that's all they're meant to be. But the chain thing is just.
But she's acting fuck like around she's with the magnets. Tea leaves, right?
Yeah, well, it's a horror movie. What do you. Yeah. I mean, Hellraiser movie was based on a spooky Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, I thought it was funny that they had this thing, and it's just like, what's she doing? Nobody knows.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can guess, I guess. I mean, we can make our own judgment, like maybe the chain would move and point, you know, magnetically towards supernatural beings.
Which would make sense given what we saw with the silverware in
right.
the other house.
Were they screwing around with electromagnetic fields or something like that, I guess is one way to look at it. And we certainly see enough pseudoscience in Ghost Hunter stuff. We're getting EMP waves
yes.
off of.
Dude, what was that?
I'm so startled.
And here's another thing is that she's in Walter's house and eventually she finds this big fucking crack in a wall. Now, is that something that's there and you just can't see it unless the light is right? Or did that appear while she was doing her chain thing?
I'm thinking it was the light.
Okay, so because I had the same thought.
Well, let's talk about that to explain what's going on. So basically, the American of the three, and his name was Rosenstock, or something, Rosenstock. He explains it because they find the naked bald guy creature, and he talks about how it's an interdimensional thing where there's light and dark, and depending on how you look through things or
occupying the same space.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. They're occupying the same space. So depending on how you see it, and he uses light and dark, and I can assume those are with quotations around it, meaning two different ways to look at things, not necessarily truly dark or truly light. And when you look at it a certain way or through a certain angle or even a reflection or whatever, you're going to see something there that you otherwise wouldn't see if you looked at it a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, some things will appear and right. some will vanish, and some things will be in different perspective. There's like one point where they find one of the naked creatures under the bed, and because they're looking at it from one direction, and they come around from the back of the bed and see its legs and stuff.
That was so awesome.
But when they kind of look a different direction, the front of the creature is coming at them. So the perspective and the way you view things is that the creatures can be here or there.
Right. And then and other times they look and there's nothing under the bed.
Right.
You know, and then they just go
around.
Which
is why Walter was losing his goddamn mind.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, because
is
he
it
hadn't
there?
Heard,
I don't
hadn't,
know.
Yeah, because he hadn't heard that. Basically what happened, that's another problem too, is that since they're in, even though they have communication and they're and they're not far from each other, they're still in different houses. So when Rosenstock figures it out, he tells it to the cop because the cop's with him, but doesn't tell it to the other two. So the other two haven't heard his hypothesis yet.
Right, and right. Isn't he telling it to the cop as he's doing the thing with the glass?
Yes.
Trying to explain it to him?
Yes.
So the audience is right there with him, right? That we have just found this out, and that's what makes that scene, again, make some sense. Right, so we're there kind of on the other end of the phone going, like, just listen to each other for fuck's sake!
Right. And so back in Walter's house, Maura's looking through this crack, and she sees Walter, and she's trying to get his attention and get him to come back, but I guess he doesn't see her. And then the cop comes back over from the other house and is like, I gotta go. He's just like, I can't handle this shit. I'm out.
Oh, yeah, I'm just
and,
a cop.
And as he's telling her this, one of those fucking things reaches out of the crack and grabs Maura by the head and snaps her neck.
Yeah.
It's just like, ah, shit.
And pulls her into the crack.
And it's neat. It's this long, it's a long, almost like alien like arm. Reminded me of like that hand in
Lord
of the
Rings. Fingers.
Very stretched out, yes. And this is when he actually has a heart attack. And I love this scene so much.
Oh,
they do the sound with the heart. And then he's down on the ground and he can't really move. And this thing is crawling towards him. And the camera is rotating around him. And it's when it's on one side of his body, you can see the thing. And when it's on the other side of his body, you can't see the thing.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out where it is and if it's going to get him. And at the same time, he's having a heart attack. It's just like, oh, my God, make it stop.
And they keep the focus on him.
Right.
Throughout that little scene. So this is playing in the background. You just see this blurry image.
Right.
Just
that's
a smidgen
that's cool
out of
about.
Focus.
Yeah.
You know, crawling around, appearing, disappearing. You see it's got like its eye is like a green glowing eye. And I'm pretty sure that was done practically.
Yeah.
That he just wore like funky contact lenses or something. But it's just. Oh, it's a great image.
It's a very tense scene because the very fact, as Phil said, the cast is ensemble. So you don't know who's going to live or die. So for all we knew at this moment, this was going to be his last scene.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, for all we know, he could be the Argentinian, like Brad Pitt. We got no clue. As Americans, they're all random schmoes, so they could all go.
Right. Well, and that's the thing too, is because like. For a while, I thought Janos, or whatever the guy's name is, was the lead. And then you think the cop's the lead. And then you think the woman may be the lead. And then they just are taking everybody out left and right. And we didn't even talk about Janos, but when Janos
ends up inside a fucking cabinet somehow.
Well, and that's what happens
with
is the
glass in my eyes.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is that we were talking about. He was looking across the street, and he was thinking that it was Rosenstock, but it was actually the creature. And then suddenly, the creature appears in front of the window, based off of the change of light.
Surprise, motherfucker!
Yeah, because he looks by, to the right of the pane of window, and then he walks to the left, and when he goes to the right, he doesn't see the creature, but when he's on the left, he does. But then, when he finally looks to the right again, the creature's right in front of him, and the glass, it breaks the glass in front of him, and then it cuts away, and then we find out later that he got blinded from the glass, and then the creature dragged him into a cabinet, basically a sideboard,
And for some reason, if you open the door, you can't see him. But if you tear away a piece of the back, you can.
Yeah, that perspective rule.
Right. So he's stuck in one of the alternate dimensions.
He's one of them now.
Yeah, and he's trying to say, get me out of here. I can't see. And it's just freaky as hell because the cop.
And then the cop's the one that finds him in there, and that's when he goes back across to Moore and is like, fuck this, I'm out, I can't.
Yeah. Right. And he leaves the poor bastard, too. That's the fun.
Right. Yeah. So the cop survives his heart attack, and then
oh my gosh, this is
the mother shows up.
Right, with the corpse of the cop.
And he's like, hey, I had a fucking heart attack. Could you take me to the hospital? But she doesn't want to talk about that because she wants to talk about
insane. She's
the
gone
fact that she took her boy back and buried him in concrete. And why would you do that?
And isn't that just like a woman?
Yeah.
You're having a heart attack. They just want to talk about why you put their boy in a freezer and then dumped him in the ground and buried him under concrete.
So this
was the best scene of the movie, in my opinion.
Finally, he's just like, look, I got to get to the hospital. We can talk about this later. So finally, they go out to her car, and he goes to get in the car, and the corpse of the kid is sitting there in the car. And she's like, well, I couldn't just leave my boy.
Yeah, she snapped.
It's just like, oh, no. So he staggers back over to his own car. And he's sitting in the car, and then Mora comes running at the car, like twisted all upside down, almost
oh my god,
almost reminiscent of the spider walk scene from The Exorcist. Yeah. She's all twisted around upside down and comes running at the car. And what did she say?
They're torturing us.
They're torturing us. Yes.
Still yeah, you still, gotta save you still us. Have time to save us or something like that.
Yeah, and he's like, "Fuck this!"
Get the fuck out of there.
Starts the car and gets out of Dodge. Now, here's my question: I don't know anything about public services in South America, but given that this cop had a phone and a radio, you think at some point he might have gotten an ambulance? Do they not have that down there?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, if it was Venezuela, maybe not.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah, they should have them down there.
Yeah, he forgot that part.
But I don't care.
I might have forgotten it, too, if that thing had come charging at me. So he gets out of there, and he's sitting in his car. And even though he just had a heart attack, he decides it's a good idea to smoke a cigarette. And he's chilling out in his car, and somebody he knows at the police station starts hailing him on the radio because they're looking for him back in that neighborhood. And he's like, no, get out of that neighborhood. But they aren't. So he goes driving back to discover that the lady has taken the kid in the house. And she actually hung herself, so that's neat. And the kid's still in there, all zombified in his room. So he takes gas and soaks the inside of the house and puts a trail going to the outside and is going to burn the house down. And he's trying to light a match, and he's having trouble getting the match lit. And I was thinking to myself, man, this guy sucks at this. Until they shift the camera angle, and you see that it's what's his face?
Jano.
Janos, yeah. From the other dimension, blowing his matches out. I thought that was actually kind of funny. So then he finally gets the fire lit, and the house starts burning down. And then I think we have our final scene here back at the whatever it is, asylum or prison, we don't know, where Juan is still there, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
A significant amount of time has gone by, apparently, and they're questioning him about all these people.
But now it's different questioners, right? It's none of the
right
the original four. It's not paranormal or the cop.
Yeah, right. It's just a bunch of prosecutors and investigators. Yeah.
So they're questioning him about the people that disappeared in his neighborhood, and he's trying to answer their questions. And while they're asking him questions, he points behind them and says, "Did he come with you?" And then they turn around to look, and there's nothing there. And so then they're showing him pictures of the people that disappeared, and he takes the one in the middle. It was Argentinian Donald Sutherland, right?
Yes. Rosenstock or something like that.
Rosenstock. And he turns the picture around so the investigators can see it, and they're like, and he's like, "It's him, only he's burnt. He came with you, right?" And they all turn around, and you still don't see anything. And then Juan's like, "Yeah, he came with you." And then the investigators see a chair move, and then the chair flies at the camera and roll credits.
Speaking of paranormal activity.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, because what happened to Funes? That's the cop. He just disappears, right? And they're wondering where he is.
They think he's a fugitive because he burnt the house down. They think.
Yeah, they thought he had something to do with it.
Yeah, don't they say he was last seen a year ago or hasn't been seen?
Yeah. They think he ran away.
He witnessed how Fune set the house and others on fire. There were people. He's a fugitive. Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying. Because I have the scene on right now in the background. We believe he would be involved in your wife's murder, as well as what they say.
Juan knows that's not true.
No. Yeah, he was there.
He knows.
Well, you know what? I got to tell you. You put me in an asylum for a year. He admits he was on heavy medication early on. I might start doubting that I saw what I thought I saw.
Well, except they still have the pictures of the shower, right?
Well, she was murdered in the shower.
Well, yeah, but do you really think a dude could do that?
Pick up a woman and bash her head back and forth in a shower? Yeah.
On each end of the shower half a dozen times?
Well, I don't have video. It doesn't say, here's which Mark smacked ones.
I know. I'm just saying. Your arms would be real fucking tired if you could pull that off. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe you took snack break.
Depends on how strong he is and how petite she is.
Yeah, we saw him.
I mean, you can sit down, eat a sandwich, go right back to it.
Yeah. She wasn't going anywhere.
Murdering your wife is all about pacing yourself.
Well, that wasn't murder. That was over murder.
Well, speaking of the murder of this guy's wife, Blue Maddie's wife, they begin to talk about how there's fingerprints around his house, not just in the bathroom, but the fingerprints are her fingerprints, not his fingerprints or any murderer's fingerprints. And at that point, that's when he says, "Did he come with you?" And then they say who, they know stuff is fishy, I thought that was an awesome coda or ending or whatever you want to call it, because the ghosts are still there.
Well, and it totally sets up a sequel if they want to do that.
Yeah, that's true.
I heard this film may be remade in English language.
I would go see it.
Yeah, I think I would. I don't know how.
Depends on who directs it.
Yeah, and the screenplay too.
You know, I understand the hesitance against another remake, but at the same time, some of them have been good. I think there's a better chance of it being good, being a foreign to English language remake than just an old English movie to a newer English movie remake.
That's fair.
I mean, the original is usually better. I'll admit I'm probably going to get yelled at for this, but I actually like the remake of The Ring better than the original Japanese one.
Well, a lot of people do, so it's not a big deal.
But yeah, I think there's a solid chance it could end up being a really good film. Of course, you know, there's Martyrs. It doesn't always work out.
That was so bad.
And apparently they remade Inside. There was very little fanfare when that got released. I think it's out there.
I suspect it's one of those things where when the film came out, they snapped up the rights and they said, shit, we just spent whatever, $5 million to get the rights to this movie. We never made the movie. Just make something.
Because
you think about the amount of time that passed between the Martyrs remake and Originals mm-hmm. and the time the remakes got released. Usually those rights are probably within a 10-year window or maybe 6 or 7 years.
Oh, that's right. Get Inside. It done or lose the rights. Yep.
Yeah. So that might be the case, right? We compare that to like The Ring, where it's only a couple of years difference, right. Or Let Me In compared to Let the Right One In, where they really made sure that film was done and it wasn't, and I think done well. I think the problem with this, and it's not a, well, the catch, because I don't want to say it's a problem. Some films, right? There's some cultural translation issues that, from time to time. I don't think that's an issue here.
No,
right. I don't think this is a cultural thing, like, you know, where they have to fix it up a little bit.
Yeah, Shudder, for example, that one had a few cultural things because it was very deep in the Buddhist religion.
Right.
And
or the wailing.
Yeah, the wailing's another one. Yeah.
Oh, I think it would be a fool's errand to try and remake that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying try to remake, but I'm saying I don't think that there's any cultural stuff that's lost in translation here.
No, I agree. No.
And so my concern is that they would just take what are some really creative visuals and turn it into something more standard.
No, right. and that's viable. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you if that could happen.
And really, there's nothing in this film that can't be done in, for instance, the next Insidious film or the next...
Right.
Conjuring film, right? Because it is all really just the visuals. It's a quote unquote ghost story with just some awesome visual stuff, right? So I had to ask my wife. I had to text her because I was trying to figure out. I was going to watch this, and I said, "Well, do I want to watch it with her, or just wait for her to go to bed and then watch it afterwards?" I couldn't remember if she watched it with me last year or not. I just texted her, did you see the movie Terrified with me last year? And she said, well, can you hum a few bars? And I was like, because I don't know how to describe it without spoiling it if she hadn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
you could have just said that Argentinian ghost story film.
Well, I said it was Argentinian film, but that might not necessarily click because we knew it was Spanish language. I don't know if we knew it was Argentinian at the time we watched it. Right. And I just said, "Dead kid at the table." And that was it. That was the best I could do. I said, "That's as non-spoiler as you can get." And she's like, "Yep, I saw it. Okay." But like that's it. It's like the dead kid at the table. That's the image, right?
Right.
The crawling up on the guy, the window, the under the bed, the naked man staring over the bed.
Mara running out to the car.
Right. Oh, the kid backing into the truck. That was my week of like every film I watched, somebody getting hit by a car.
right. And they show it like, too. Did Pam like it?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Didn't understand it like in terms of what was going on, which.
Right.
We talked about, but it's not really a film that you have to understand it.
Well, that's going to be my biggest concern if they remake it, is that they'll feel the need to explain it all through lame exposition.
Yeah, they'll bog down with needing to give an answer when, honestly, part of the fear factor is the lack of closure.
Right. Yeah, I actually, when we discussed this on our end of year list last year for Chrissy, because I know we may actually even discuss it offline because I was trying to explain it to her. I don't even think in the movie they talk about that the haunting is a longitude latitude spot.
No, they just basically they describe it as finding like the nest of the activity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they don't explain why. And the thing is I think that's a good thing because the investigators don't know either, and that's the reason they're there, right?
And, right. That's why you investigate, is to find out.
Exactly, and we don't know why the ghosts are now coming and are more prominent at that moment in time, you know, that week. And we also don't know if, you know, there was like a killings there, you know, 700 years ago between two native tribes and their ghosts. Or, you know, we don't know anything. We just never find out either.
You moved the grave but left the bodies!
Yeah, right. So unlike those type of movies like Poltergeist and whatnot, we never learn an explanation at all why it happens.
Well, we got the explanation, Poltergeist, and that was what's great. It was a nice, simple explanation that you just pissed off the dead people by building a house on their graves.
Right, which was when I look back at that movie, I go, that was stupid because, you know, people are going to be building swimming pools. So when they were building their swimming pool, why didn't they find the bodies? Because you're only 6 feet under, right?
Yeah, well, But, you know, it's been 40 years. If it took you this long to figure that out, you know, it's...
There you go. No, I always thought of that, even back in the day.
Yeah. But
like you said, you just let it go because it's a good movie.
But, see, like, for me, that's always what the downfall of a lot of ghost stories are. Like, even The Changeling, which is an awesome ghost story.
I knew you were going to say that one.
Is that eventually it boils down to a detective story of figuring out why is the ghost haunting us? And that's, I'm not interested in the why is the ghost haunting you. I'm just interested in the ghost scaring the fuck out of people. Right. And, you know, the more you understand it, the less scary it is. And that's, I think, what made Poltergeist work, is that the explanation was just, you got ghosts and they're pissed.
Sure. Right. And why, you know, something like The Others was a damn good film, because it was scary, but it was a huge twist at the end. And I thought, you know, so there's various ones, but you're right. Unlike those films, well, The Changeling is considered a great film. You're right. By the last act, it's just a detective story to figure out a murder, basically.
And again, that might be a me thing. Some people really like that aspect of it.
Sure. Right. Exactly. So no worries. But yeah, it's stuff like this here that come out of nowhere, or The Others. That come out of nowhere and do something new are the type of films that really make it for me. And even though The Others isn't really a quote-unquote scary film, just the scene when you see the three caretakers, I remember screaming in the middle of the theater when I saw that. I go, those devil worshippers are coming! And everybody laughed, and it was scary as hell, I felt. But this is the same thing. It's like you just don't know what's going on, and it's scary, and that's what makes a great supernatural film. And that's why, Eric, when I always talk to you about how I don't really like supernatural films, is because they're not scary, you know. And this one, even though it's different than The Exorcist and The Omen, I always felt those two were scary, you know. But it could just be me.
Well, I think it depends on how you define supernatural. I think supernatural covers a broad swath of stuff that doesn't have an easy explanation. Including this film.
Right. Well, and you know, The Conjuring and Insidious are scary, too, and I like those films a lot. But for whatever reason, they aren't as scary to me because they felt more like jump scares rather than, say, this film here or The Others, which was
a lot of jump scares. It's the noise, you know. It's the loud, the cat being dropped in the piano.
Right. Well, yeah, like one of the jump scares here was the one that scared Eric, and they didn't. I don't think they really even used the sound effect. They just
no.
And then the other one that really creeped me out Well, there was a lot of them because, you know, the creature coming out of the hole in the wall and all the, and the creature under the bed. But the one where Moore is all fucked up and she runs out to the car and she's out of focus and she's slowly running closer and closer and you're wondering, oh, who's coming out of the house? And then you see what it is. It's like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah. And it's really unsettling. It's the way it was shot and there wasn't like a stinger, you know? There wasn't
right. Right. There's no noise, no music, no stinger. And then when she's talking, her mouth's actually opening and talk, you know, actually speaking. You know, it's not just like a voiceover that and they're trying to make you think that it's coming from her. You know, it's like, holy shit. But yeah, it was pretty solid. What other scenes are things that we want to bring up? That we have? And oh, even the last scene when he points, did he come with you? And it's like, no way.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else? Anyone?
I think we've hit everything.
Yeah, this is a film that maybe we're missing things thematically. And, you know, I'm sure Chrissy would point them out if she was here. But, this is a haunted house story and a fucking great haunted house story. I think we now have four people here who are jaded horror fans.
Yes.
And so when we say that this is a film that, you know, has some scary moments and freaky moments, you can trust us on that. Now, that doesn't mean now go turn it on and go, yeah, I dare you to scare me, because it's not going to work then.
Yeah.
Usually doesn't.
You know, and I hate saying that because that's what you don't want to. The scariest movie since The Exorcist, because then people go in with that attitude. But you know what? If someone told me this is the scariest movie they'd ever seen, I really wouldn't necessarily say they would be just wrong. A big baby or wrong. I would say this is a strong contender for a really fucking scary movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it was just so well done. And it was only an hour and 30 minutes. And I know back last year when we were talking about it, like you said, Mike, you know, it could have been expanded maybe 10, 15 minutes. And it could have even been better to maybe fix a few minor things. But that's the key, right? Minor, right? It's such an effective film in its short runtime that any improvement would be, you know, justified.
Not
and fine,
an improvement.
But it wouldn't, yeah, it wasn't necessary, exactly. Yeah.
I think we wrap this up.
I think so, yeah. I think so. All right, so before we get into some house cleaning stuff and our final thoughts, does anybody have anything they wanted to bring up, like news or stuff they've seen that are interesting? A couple things I want to bring up. Abe, me and you were discussing about a Pet Sematary book episode. Our two guest co-hosts that are going to join us are ready to go. So I was thinking sometime in mid-June we'll do it.
Okay, sounds good to me.
All right, sounds good. Also, Mike, me and you have discussed a couple times offline to maybe do an episode on Black Summer, season one. So I'm not sure if we want to set up a date for that. Maybe again, we could set up a date.
I got to get through Scarecon because I've got way too much right now on my plate. Just figuring stuff out. And then once that's subsided, then I can probably go back and do a rewatch.
Sure. So I was thinking at Scarecon we'll discuss that and maybe, you know, throw a date out of rewatch and whatnot. And if anybody else, meaning you, Abe, or you, Eric, or even Chrissy wants to join us, give a date where they can watch the eight episodes, and then we can set the date to record it. But I know you felt that show was real strong, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, same here. There was actually Christina Jones on the Facebook group was actually brought that up as a topic the other day, and there was some discussion on the show, as a matter of fact. Let's see. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about anything they've seen, video games they've played, anything genre-related, books? Anything?
Not today.
Nope.
Well, right.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw John Wick 3 over the weekend, and I liked it. I didn't like quite as much as the first two. I thought there was a little more drawn out than it was needed. But if you
like, I liked it better than two, but not one.
I heard Braun's in it.
Yeah, Braun's in it.
He is.
Yep, there are dogs in it that don't die. So yeah, it's definitely, if you like the first two films, you should like the third one. That's what I would say. I also want to give a strong recommendation. They're about to finish the first season of What We Do in the Shadows, and I think that's the show has gotten stronger as it's gone along. There's, I think it's maybe the seventh episode of the season is filled with some fun vampire cameos. They just did, and the second to last episode is called The Orgy, which is a lot of fun. So if you like the original film, check out the TV series.
And where's it on? Which station?
You can find it's on FX. And if you have a cable channel or satellite streaming service, or you subscribe to the FX app, you can go to the FX app and stream it that way. And they have all the episodes there.
Okay, so you can do on demand then.
Yes.
All right, very good. Let's see. Quentin Tarantino's film got a strong critique of very positive at Cannes, so that's good news.
Oh, yep. Yeah, sorry.
Go on. Yep. No, that's all I wanted to say. So it looks like it's going to be another winner for Tarantino when it comes out in August or late July, actually. Mike, what do you got?
Yeah. So. Someone posted this in the Old Horror Etc. Facebook page. Chrissy and I, and I think Eric, we've talked about the Eli Roth documentary series about horror.
Yep.
It was a history of horror, whatever it was called.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and so they are putting up, Eli Roth is putting up on iTunes, podcasts that are the entire interviews he did with all the different people.
So basically taking the interviews that he filmed and they're making them into audio podcasts.
Right. And, you know, so this is a 10-part series, 8-part series? About 40 minutes each part?
I can't remember how many parts it was. I don't think it was 10. I think it was less than 10.
So I know it was more than 6. So let's say it was an 8-part series.
Oh, yeah.
40 minutes each. The Tarantino interview is over 2 hours.
Damn.
So you have a 2-hour interview plus hour interview with Quentin Tarantino, I'm assuming, talking all about horror films, if he can keep them on subject. You know, you have conversations with, like I think Tony Todd was another name. He's slowly releasing them a little bit at a time. So I would recommend, I have not heard any of them.
I just pulled it up on my app here. I pulled it up in the Overcast. It's available. Stephen King, Edgar Wright, Quentin Tarantino, Diablo Cody, Brian Fuller, and Tony Todd are the ones that are up so far.
And Tony Todd was, I think, the shortest one, and that was 45 minutes.
Yeah, you are correct. And the longest one appears to be Quentin Tarantino, which is over 2 hours. Brian Fuller was over an hour and a half. So, yeah, this is a good amount of material here.
Now, who's Brian Fuller? I know that man.
Let me look closer.
Brian Fuller's the guy that did the first season of American Gods. He did the first season of Heroes, Pushing Daisies, the Munsters remake, Dead Like Me. I don't know what he's done in terms of horror film, if he's done anything.
Right, but genre anyway. All
right. Right.
And it looks like coming are interviews with Greg Nicotero, Rob Zombie, Tippi Hedren. Amongst others.
Zombie Tippi Hedren?
That's awesome, Tippi Hedren. Nice. That's a family of generation to generation to generation that become movie stars. Melanie Griffith and then Dakota Johnson. So that's cool. Yeah. And I like Eli Roth, so maybe I'll check him out. The podcast, anyway.
Oh, he did Hannibal. Duh.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's the horror. There
he
you
did
go.
The horror. Yeah, he did the Hannibal TV series.
Yeah, Brian Fuller. Yeah. All right. Anything else? Anybody? Anyone?
Nope.
Okay, but we mentioned earlier Mystic that we're meeting up, and we mentioned the Quentin Tarantino film, and it appears that may be the film that we're going to do in Mystic when we're down there, because it comes out the same weekend. So that will be an exciting time for sure. Now, Eric, you actually do another podcast, besides all the podcasts we mentioned earlier. You do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I might have a podcasting problem. Yes, I do a general interest podcast with Dan called the Askancy Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it all those places: Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Overcast. I'm missing one. Whatever. You can find it all the places.
Podbean.
Yeah.
Podbean. Spotify,
so it's out there.
iTunes, Google.
I know Watson's been having fun going back and listening to old episodes, and he keeps on pinging me with things that I said that I don't remember saying, which is always an interesting thing.
There you go. Mike, and what are those podcasts? Well, we already mentioned them, so we can skip them again, but people can listen to our spin-off podcast as well. But you also do a genre podcast, Mike.
Sort of, kind of, when I get around to it. And that's called Unnatural Selections, www.unnaturalselections.com.
Excellent. And Abe, we already mentioned everything about Dark Discussions, but I think some folks are looking forward to your opinions on the Pet Sematary book. So when we do that special episode sometime in June, it will delight a few folks, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very fun episode. I'll be interested in kind of delve deep into the book.
Yep, exactly. And we won't have to know any comparisons with anything else. We're just going to discuss the book itself, and we'll have opinions from myself, Abe, and then two of our listeners and members on our Facebook group, Kevin Letts and Barrett Heisner. So it'll be a good conversation. And the good thing about the conversation also will include people who've listened to the audiobook as well, so we can hear if it's abridged or not, and it'll be curious to see how that goes. All right, so I think that's it. So let's give our final thoughts on this film. So, Abe, why don't you start?
I thought this was a really solid film overall. It's well shot. It takes a lot of the conventions that we usually see in the supernatural subgenre and adds its own spin to it. It makes things feel fresh and does some really cool stuff. Some really eerie scenes. They're both unnerving and just really cool. The performances are very strong. It's only available in subtitle through the native language. But that should be a problem if you don't mind subtitles at all. And it is only available to Shudder, but you can even just get like a 7-day free trial if you just want to try it out. And I would honestly say, if you're going to use that time at all to watch any of those films on there, I would suggest checking out Terrified, because it's a pretty damn good film overall. It's a shame that I didn't get a chance to see last year, because I think it would have actually made a place on my list.
All right, very good. Yeah, I concur with pretty much everything Abe said. It is a scary, supernatural, horror thriller, but unlike what we've seen in American films of this ilk, as well as Japanese, Korean, or even European, this is completely different, and yet It has nothing to do with cultural differences that make it different. It's different because the writer and director, who's the same person, just did a brilliant job in going out of the box to make such a film. It was one of the scariest films, I would say, that I've seen in the past few years. As Mike stated, you know, we're not going to say scariest film since The Exorcist, but it's definitely one of the scariest films that anybody who says it's scary, we're going to definitely high five them, because yeah, it is. And that's from, like Mike said, jaded fans of horror. So I would highly recommend it. If you don't have Shudder, it's worth getting just for 1 month, because you can do that. You can sign up $5, watch this film and get rid of it if you don't like this. The station, but the station is a pretty damn good station. And if you're a horror fan, meaning you're listening to this podcast, it's a station that you should definitely check out. And Terrified is one of the highlights for sure. It's a fantastic film. Mike?
Yeah. You know, I'll make it a pitch again for Shudder, because it's just keeps it simple and basic. It's a great ghost story. It's Shudder has free trials. Sign up for it, watch it, then explore and try some other things if you haven't done it. This is a good example of just a film where it's not as much the concept, it is entirely about the execution. Right? It's not like, say, a film like, I don't know, Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's a great concept story and there's a lot of ways to go with it. It's basically a ghost story with a unique execution. And really solid visuals and some stuff that's just creepy as hell. So, yeah, high recommend.
All right, excellent. Eric?
Yeah, what everybody else says. This movie is great. You should check it out. I also encourage supporting Shudder. Horror fans are always complaining about how their genre is overlooked and doesn't get its due. Here is a streaming service dedicated to horror, but it's not going to stay around if nobody pays for it. So chip in your $5 a month, subscribe to Shudder, and watch Terrified. It's a good movie.
All right, very good. So once again, 2018 was released in North America. It is called Terrified. Once more, there's a lot of good performances, but I'll just name the writer / director, since that's the person we'll probably hear from again. And his name is, and I'm assuming it's a man, Demian Rugner. Demian Rugner. So well done by that individual, and hopefully we will hear more from him in the future. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Terrified. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.